afternoon, everybody, for attending. This is the second iteration of this talk. The first one we had at FWA. Was anyone here there for that? Okay, cool. So we have someone from the last Open for Vanity. Open for Vanity is going to be what we're calling this series, where we discuss sort of public transit in cities where foray conventions are based, which is great. So we are here in historical Philadelphia, which is a great place to be, as you can imagine. And previously, when we did this panel, we did it based on the city that we're in. So we were in Atlanta, and we did it based on the sort of development of the Beltline project that they have there, which is an old sort of, was it CSX? It was multiple railroads.
It's like an industrial belt, and sort of the predecessors to CSX, one of the southern class one freight railroads.
Yeah, and so they have this ring around the city to divert all of their freight traffic and stuff like that, you know, that was longer haul to get around that when you live in the heart of Atlanta. And what wound up happening was it just got sort of abandoned and derelict, and then a young student at one of the colleges there proposed turning it into a bicycle path. So that sort of kicked off the frenzy of rails to trail that we see in a lot of places, where they are now converting old abandoned railroad systems to bicycle paths, which is really cool. I mean, also, it's cool and it's not cool at the same time, because, of course, more rail would be great, and America needs better public transit. So
I like rails to trails, but the trouble is, once it becomes a trail, it's really hard to turn it back into rail.
It needs to be rails and trails. Honestly, a hybrid corridor, but we haven't yet to see anyone do that. We'll see what exactly winds up happening in the next century. But for the time being, that's what they wound up going with, and even though it sounds like a great idea on paper, there's sort of a gentrifying effect that it has. So property values in that area have skyrocketed since that happened, which is really unfortunate, because it pushes out a lot of the people that lived there originally when it was, you know, mainly people of color, mainly people that don't have access to the same opportunities to get loans and things needed to purchase a house. So there have been some movements towards better equity in that area. There is a program now where if you are a certain income bracket and you know you're a historical resident of the area, you can apply and get a special loan to subsidize purchasing a house off the Beltline in any of those neighborhoods. And development isn't 100% finished yet. It's actually still in progress, I think, in the southeastern side. So it's still, like, you know, rails that they're pulling up and putting down pavement. But it's otherwise pretty nice. It's a nice way to get around from, you know, even from the center city. I have an electric unicycle. I don't know, I think everywhere. Some of you have seen it. It is a violently pink one-wheel contraption. And I fly down the street on that. So I'm from New York City. You put your hands over it, you're done.
And I'm from Washington, D.C., taxation without representation.
I know there's a lot of D.C. people here. These old, historic, sort of colonial era cities. So, so the point that I'm trying to get to is, like, I don't even take the MTA anymore, so I just ride my unicycle everywhere. But public transit is still really important. They just did a fair hike where I am, so now it's almost damn near $3 for a single trip on the subway, which is bonkers. But, you know, the pandemic did a lot of crazy stuff going on, but we are in the city of brotherly love, so we some of our favorite stuff. So even though the panel title says SEPTA, there's a lot going on here in Philadelphia. So there's PATCO. How many of you live in South Jersey? Okay, we have some South Jersey people, so that's going to be your regional rail network. And then there's, of course, you know, Amtrak and whatever that runs this, but we're going to go over...
And New Jersey Transit, Atlantic City Line, and River Line across the
Yes. Yeah, so there's a lot of great stuff going on here, so I was going to sort of start with, why this stuff is important. So, I mean, there's probably some locals here. I did invite one of my friends who's an electric unicyclist here to come in and talk about stuff, and just kind of disappeared. So, that's all right. So, the first thing is that a lot of people in Philadelphia woke up to the need for public transit just this year, when I-95 melted down.
That was my bad.
So I-95 melted down, and it shut down in, what was it, the north or south end? I don't remember.
Both.
I think the collapse went southbound, they couldn't make it northbound.
They also said that northbound was compromised.
Yeah.
And now I unfortunately didn't do enough research for so what is the status of that? Is it fixed? Is it
temporary?
But that exit is buried.
Yes.
They still need to rebuild the bridge.
You can drive over the highway, but you can't get under it. The road that goes underneath you can't pass.
So there's two exits in a row that are closed now.
How am I gonna get out of here?
Okay, so I'll write that down as an entry on the PennDOT or
it's going to be
PennDOT owns the highway, but it's gets former funding from federal highway.
Yeah, so I'm just going to make a move in that category. So sort of the road network in Philadelphia is what draws such an urgent need to public transit here, because so many people have gotten hooked on cars, more than have gotten hooked on phonics, unfortunately. And this car addiction shows up everywhere, but now we're starting to see, how many of you were on Race Street just around the corner here and saw they had just milled it? Walking and driving on that, real torture. Riding my unicycle, forget about it. So that's just one of the problematic streets. But actually, the most problematic street in Philadelphia, in my opinion, is actually the Roosevelt Avenue.
Yes.
Fuck that.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. So we're going to spend a few minutes talking about why Roosevelt Avenue is the worst. Because it was not always that way. And actually, Roosevelt Avenue was going to sort of plug it in a golden age of SEPTA back in the day. And it didn't actually happen. It all fell through. So how many of you know this about Roosevelt Avenue? There are abandoned SEPTA tunnels underneath that street. There are abandoned SEPTA stations underneath that street. I was just saying, unused, completely neglected, and there's even a median that runs the entire distance through the Northeast section there.
Can we have a rave there?
Sorry.
Literally.
You can have a rave anywhere.
You can have a rave there.
I know where the entrances are.
And the reason why Roosevelt Avenue is particularly pertinent is just 2 months ago, MSNBC completely, I didn't even know this when I was coming into this town, but MSNBC put out a piece about why pedestrian fatalities are skyrocketing right now. Because they're actually the highest they have been in the entire country since 1975. If that tells you anything about how bad it is being a pedestrian right now. And the one place that they went in the entire country to talk to someone, they didn't talk about the subway, they didn't talk about, any of the stuff there. They went right to Roosevelt Avenue and talked to a woman whose entire family was mowed down at 2 a.m. while crossing the street. So just imagine, losing your child and your husband, while they were crossing Roosevelt Avenue. It's despicable. There's someone that was drunk as being and just sort of wiped them out there. It's a real heartbreak. So that's just what's happening in this country right now. And it's so sad because, as we just said, they built out maybe 60% of that infrastructure, from what I've read, and just never finished it. And that was supposed to market in this golden age of new stuff there. But in terms of SEPTA, because now we're going to jump into SEPTA, they have not done anything about Roosevelt Avenue, they haven't announced anything about Roosevelt Avenue. It's still what we call a killer strode, which is a combination of a street and a road. How many of you are familiar with that concept from YouTube?
Not light.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I don't have to go too crazy in explaining it, but it's basically the worst of both worlds. And it's a place where people just go to move their car down it, and there's no real space for open business development. There's no place for people to congregate and feel very good about where they're standing. It's just sort of a no place. So that's what happened to Roosevelt Avenue, but with that big median and the subway underneath it, it was supposed to be sort of a flourishing urban, new urban center in the Northeast there, but it wound up being nothing. So, as unfortunate as that is, it's not like SEPTA is doing nothing these days, because how many of you have heard of or have written on the Wawa Media extension that was just built last
okay,
so
we got
some... So, Jersey,
I've not yet written down to Wawa. I wrote out to Media on several years ago.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting, albeit problematic approach to this, because they built that extension there, but as we see the water criticism because when you get out, first of all, there isn't even a Wawa that you can go to. It's a massive rip-off.
See, the problem is you go to Wawa's in town.
Yeah.
Not convenience store. That's the problem.
So it's funny enough, there is sort of a place, like, how many of you have been to, like, Colorado, you know, where there's, like, the Four Corners, where you can stand on the corners of each state and, like, see shit. They have, in the Wawa media, the Wawa station there, they have a place you can stand, and there's signs that point, like, to the nearest Wawa's that are around you. Each part is a direction, which is really funny, but none of them are immediately there, which is a damn shame. And the transit center seems more like a car park, unfortunately. There's supposed to be more transit-oriented development. There is a development that is near there, but people I know who've gone there say it's really hard to walk to. And if that was part of your commute, you would be like torturing yourself to worm over the fence and get to that station. So it just wants to show you how sad this is, that we're building this new infrastructure that isn't serving anyone, really. Just car drivers that are looking for intermodal transit. But it's still better than having a ton of cars going to downtown Philly.
I live near Exton Station, and there's no way to get to Exton Station from the communities there that's walkable. There's like a huge hill, and like it's muddy, and it's through the woods.
Yeah, that's the big problem, is that the transit organizations should not just be looking into running service, and they should not just be looking into, you know, their equipment and fleets and stuff like that. They really need to think about pedestrian considerations, because when people get off of the bus or the train, they have to walk half the time. So, yeah, it's crazy that we wind up in these situations where we have stations that are down near inaccessible.
I live not far from a regional rail station, Cornwalls Heights, which basically it has the largest parking lots, but the area around there is terrible. Like, you have to walk a long sidewalk to get under the bridge and then over into the other side if you want to go to New York or something. And it just boggles me that they didn't put a pedestrian bridge or something to make it easier or accessible.
Yeah, I feel like some of these institutional problems are things that we can fix. You know,
I feel like San Francisco has the bottle they're redeveloping. Paper station it is south of towards Wilmington, NEC, maybe a couple down there, and they're, you know, they're seem to be using kind of this cookie cutter model for the new station problems.
Yeah, so without being like the standard that we have right now, there's only so much we can do. But that part of SEPTA is exciting, but like, you know, still a little bit disheartening when you see the way that we build things nowadays. And all we can hope is that the older generation that is hooked on cars starts to die out. You start to get into micromobility. How many people here have an e-bike or an e-scooter or an e-anything? Okay, so that's one. Okay, that's two, you know, but I love micromobility. Jill, I didn't see you over there. I like micromobility. I highly recommend it unless you know, have like a disability that prevents you from doing it, of course. But and even then, you know, everything's going to be motorized. Things will be easier for pedestrians in the future. It's just we have to build public transit that doesn't accommodate that. But so anyway, we can kind of move on to the next SEPTA topic, because we're going to go in the opposite direction and talk about the history of SEPTA, how it got formed, and some of the shenanigans that led to it not being as ambitious as they had planned it to be. So, back in the day, all the days, SEPTA was originally the two railroads. The Pennsylvania Railroad that went into the Pennsylvania Station right here.
Well, Suburban Station was there. Main Station 30th Street was actually built later, but it, you know, just kind of fanned out to the west from Center City and then north and south. The Northeast was not only Spoor New York to D.C. was the Pennsylvania Railroad, but also the Harrisburg-Pittsburgh line was the Pennsylvania Railroad, and several branches of it as well.
Yeah, so that was on one side of the city, and the other side of the city was Reading, right?
Yeah, which the Reading Terminal Market is underneath what used to be the Reading Terminal, where the Rock Market is underneath where the tracks used to be. And they panned out to the north and served several things. And they did at one point go to New York via the line that goes through West Trenton. They went to Reading via Norristown and other branches. All lines that go north, like Doylestown, Fox Chase, those sort of things.
Yeah, so Yeah, so basically the plan was not since the beginning to really combine these two roads, but they just sort of had these assets in the beginning, and they had been juggled by a few different entities. Originally, they had been those two railroads, and then, of course, those two railroads went bankrupt, a lot of bad stuff happened, and we wound up with Conrail and Penn Central.
I think Penn Central came first, right? And then,
yes.
Yeah.
And so, Penn Central was a merger of the Pennsylvania and the New York Central in 1966,
I'm saying. Yeah, and so Penn Central is its own thing, and if you Google it, you will see it was actually the biggest public company bankruptcy, private company, whatever, before Enron. Enron just like usurped it by a tiny bit, but it was a massive, massive bankruptcy when Penn Central went under in the 70s. So, and they had this crazy logo that was like the P with the C wrapping in it. It's really contrived.
Called the worm.
The worm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we wound up with that, and then sort of CSX became the only like soluble company at the time.
Yeah, so the government said in 1976 when Penn Central went bankrupt to create Conrail and take over the freight and operations and also hosting the passenger services. And they mentioned Northeast Corridor, which was Conrail for a couple of years, then was split off to Amtrak, which it still is. But Conrail kind of turned things around, invested in the infrastructure, and eventually actually became profitable, and then the private sector wanted to buy it back again, so that it's a split up between CSX and Northwest Southern in the 80s.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
So, Conrail did become profitable, but
yes.
The government never wanted to keep it. The initial goal was always to stabilize it and then sell it off to